Blog Talk Radio.
Nobody who's listening will tell him, but I'm thinking of getting Frank to call in when we have How about now? I'll call you right back. Can you hear me? Better? Tom?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, we can hear Tom.
All right.
I'm wicked slow lately. I don't know what's going on, but hopefully I don't have to reset or anything. Everybody can hear me.
We can hear you.
Okay. Well, then. We have a little bit of a short show tonight, obviously. We're starting a half an hour late here. I don't know how much of the opening clip was heard, but it was all about War Machine, and basically Ken Shamrock took up the first part of how he'd like to break War Machine's neck, because War Machine left his daughter in Mexico when she was like 21 or something, or in her 20s. So, anyway, I mention that because Dana White made a certain list right behind War Machine. Just came out. She is the 8th sleaziest person in sports, according to GQ. Yes, yeah, Tom. Sleaziest person in sports. You believe it?
I didn't see the full list, so I guess I can't really make a comment. I'd have to see who else is on the list.
The article, a quote from the article says, "Turns out underpaying your UFC employees, bullying rivals, and generally impersonating Don King as a bald white guy doesn't do wonders for your charisma." And he is exactly one spot behind War Machine on this list. Who we all know is a scumbag of epic proportions. So I guess it says something about how at least this one person in the mainstream media sees Dana White. And another heaping against Dana White, basically, his own organization came out against him, calling it a breach of UFC Fight Night 48. He was in charge of the whole thing. UFC was regulating everything because it was over in Macau. And UFC Fight Night 48, he actually relieved one of their own judges. One of the UFC's judges, Howard Hughes, believe it. Howard the dead. A judge named Howard Hughes. In some pretzels and watch the fights from now on after the first two fights, because Dana didn't agree with his outlook on the fight.
Okay, now Rich, I don't know if you know this, but was this just based on this one evening's calls, or is there a history of Mr. Hughes going back a ways? Did you know that?
I don't know what the history is, but apparently it hasn't been put out in any detail what they mean by it, but apparently Dana said this happened from this event and admitted meltdown. I don't know what the hell else he was all freaking out about, but it sounds to me like it was a rash decision. Just two fights. He actually agreed with the judge on one of the fights and disagreed with him on one of the other fights.
It just seems like a pretty radical move, unless it would be something like if Mr. Hughes was the guy that had one of the judges that had Diego Sanchez beating Ross Pearson, or, you know, something outrageous like that. Like this had been going on for a long period of time, and finally we get this serial killer here, and we get him in a jurisdiction that he has no protection, and then we get him off the card. But if it was just for that card that night, I'd really have to wonder where we're going here with that.
Yeah, I think I don't remember reading anything that said this guy has a history. You know the way MMA media is and the way that he's got decisions, but they would probably mention it as part of that culture or had a pattern of that, but people came out pretty quick and said, you know, what's going on here? This is shady. I didn't think it was that shady. I'm going to hear the take them through the coals on this. I was like, whoa, wait a second. Because at first they didn't even know who the judge was, you know, but they just speculated. Maybe it's this Hughes guy because he didn't judge any fights after the first two fights.
Mm-hmm. I had never heard of Mr. Hughes as a judge before, so that's why I'm just kind of in the dark on this. I mean, some names ring a bell more, you know, like a C.J.
Right.
Ross situation or, you know, some of the, but this is most unusual.
Yes, sir. And, Tony, what's going on with Jermaine Taylor? Arrested. Domestic battery. One count of aggravated assault. Have you heard this? Tony.
I thought he was arrested for claiming that he won this fight over Hopkins 10 years ago.
He was actually arrested the other day for shooting his own cousin. Apparently, minor. And then the person that shot was found at a store several blocks from the home, and it turned out to be his own cousin. So now it's Wednesday morning, and not much has been out about it, except for his mugshot. TMZ posted his mugshot, but it's kind of a weird case. He and our recent guest there, Antonio Tarver, were just recently coming out of basically time off, anyway. And supposed to have a fight, but this kind of throws a wrench into things. I don't know if he gets kind of stuffed, but who knows? It's going to be quite the distraction, I think. I mean, he shot himself, so his health is probably all right. But, you know, legal cases here is probably going to keep him wrapped up for a while. Domestic battery and aggravated assault. We'll see what happens. There's a story today I read about Manny Pacquiao trying to bring Ron Artest to his Kia Motors team in the Philippines. I don't know how that's possible. It's pretty crazy. Another Pacquiao story I read recently. He's going to be opening boxing centers, training centers, with state-of-the-art technology across China. An institution has already been opened in Hong Kong, and there are plans for 16 more in cities such as Shanghai and Guangzhou. And Pacquiao said that boxing has the ability to bring people together regardless of their nationality or background. Going to be at the academy to share his vast experience through first-hand training of young fighters. Have to wait another day, wait for another day to see a Vladimir Klitschko fight this Kubrat guy in Hamburg, Germany. Suffered a torn left bicep. You ever have that, Tony?
I have not. Because it's not a lot of fun.
He says, I am very disappointed that the fight cannot take place as planned. I am in absolute top form and had a great training camp. Of course, I'm sorry for the fans, but also for my opponent, Kubrat Pulev, who is certainly training as intensely as I do. I don't think that had anything to do with the little confrontation with our buddy there, Shannon Briggs. But pulling out for the injury, he said it occurred during a before November, and we'll stay at the O2 World Arena in Hamburg. Klitschko, knockouts and 16 consecutive title defenses, successful ones, during a reign that has lasted more than 8 years now. That's the third most all-time behind only, ooh, Tony. One of them. Two more. One more.
Well, Larry Holmes.
Larry Holmes. Yeah. Tony knows. Pass the test. Klitschko last fought, of course, on April 26th, treating Alex Lapai like a punching dummy. Defeated with 11 KOs, 33 years old, and he earned his title shot with a unanimous verdict over Tony Thompson last year. And I know we talked about last week, Shannon Briggs was fighting over the weekend, and I think he got a first or second round knockout win, and he appeared on a card with a whole bunch of TBAs, so it was the only fight worth even talking about on that card. I don't even know if any of the other fights even happened. I think they just threw them in the ring. Of course, it wasn't against any big name, though, so I think if Shannon really wants that opportunity, he's going to have to start putting some tough opponents. And just keep taking these tomato cans, or as Reggie Johnson would say, guys from the bus stop, it's Reggie Johnson's birthday today. Happy birthday to Reggie. Saw that on my email today, and gave him a little shout-out on Facebook. Controversy lately. I know we didn't talk about this last week, even though it kind of broke last week. But you guys have heard of the ALS challenge, Ice Bucket Challenge, right?
Right.
So, basically, 50 Cent came up with the Cat in the Hat Challenge, and he challenged Floyd Mayweather to a page from Cat in the Hat, live on camera. I think this all stemmed a radio clip that was put out last week where they didn't just play the final clip of him getting it right. They played all the mistakes he made before he got it right, you know. And who knows what the issue was, whether he really has trouble reading, or whether it was a bad day for him, or whatever. Maybe it's a Chuck Liddell moment. Maybe he had too much NyQuil. He really had a tough time at it. 50 Cent, he's still friends with Floyd and likes Floyd, but he put a whole video saying, you know, Floyd can't read, he sucks. If he can't read it, then he's got to get money to the ALS people, or whatever. Kind of like the Ice Bucket Challenge. So today, actually, I got an email from Kelly Swanson, who's a Floyd PR person over there in Las Vegas, and she's got a clip attached of Floyd Mayweather reading another promo. And, you know, obviously there's no retakes and outtakes, it's just the final thing. And she says, oh, this is proof that he can read, then targeting of Floyd by 50 Cent. So, who knows, but it's kind of an interesting story, you know. The guy's worth hundreds of dollars, and he obviously doesn't want to be the poster boy for illiteracy. So he's coming out there and defending himself through his PR person. And it wasn't like, a clip that was meant to be published. She put it out there for the media only to check. So, that's kind of more interesting. They didn't really come out with a statement on it. They said, hey, here's proof that Floyd Penn. But obviously, he reads his checks and signs them. And he reads enough or knows enough about sports to be successful betting. But anyway, that's going around this week, and so that was kind of weird. Anybody watch Friday Night? Yeah. Last Friday?
No, I wasn't home
last Saturday. I watched it, and I don't have the results. Right. See what we got this week, Friday. So October, my birthday, they come back. Because The Atlas really likes me, I guess. October 1st.
That's not Friday, that's a Wednesday, right?
Wednesday night edition of Cruiserweight Championship fight with the WBO belt there. Marco's fighting over in Germany. He's 7-1 draw. He's fighting Mirko Larghetti, undefeated at 21-0 with 13. A huge Of course, we got some big UFC fights to talk about, and big fight coming up, rematch between Dillashaw and Barao. We'll have to get to that a little later. Just waiting on Bob Rick. So did you see any of the boxing matches over the weekend, even though it was kind of a drought of a week, Tony?
Well, no, I didn't. I ended up going, there was a biography made about But no, I was busy, and Friday night I went to see Frank Sinatra was there performing.
Frank Sinatra Festival?
Oh, yeah, I went to a festival. It was like a kind of Italian feast carnival thing.
Uh-huh.
Look at the picture. You'll see it.
Oh.
He sang My Way, High Hopes, New York, New York, all the good ones.
You mean you sang them?
I didn't sing anything. I said that was Frank Sinatra's sang.
Oh. A picture of you singing.
Hey, that baby got back. How much did Sinatra ever sign you? Yeah, you gotta get on my page from last week. It was actually a picture of. Gotta believe me.
Alright. Also, this weekend, I guess the big event is a Showtime fight with all of Floyd Mayweather's little children there. All pupils, associates, I guess you could say. From Mayweather Gym out there in Las Vegas. This is at the Palms Casino Resort. His main event's going to be Julian, still in the 15-0 with 10 knockouts. He's fighting Medina, 2-6 with 26 knockouts. Also on the card in the co-main event, a 10-round super middleweight battle between Badu Jack, 16. He's 2-12 knocker. And a couple 8th-round fights. We got Ronald Gavril at super middleweight, undefeated with 7 knockouts, fighting Thomas Bolovo, 12-2. And fighting between Ashley Theophane, who's 35-6, 6 knockouts, 1 draw, fighting Daniel Calzada, who's 10-10. That's pretty much the big there's a whole lot going on around the world, but not really, huge fights. Then we go to all the way to next Wednesday before there's anything, or next Thursday before there's a big Leon Spinks III is fighting next Thursday. No, he was fighting. Oh. He's fighting against TBA. Oh, duck. So again, kind of a slow week boxing coming up on the big fight, the rematch, Mayweather versus Maidana 2, and they're hyping all that stuff up. What? And I keep coming from a wind tunnel today, Tony. What? Say it again, Tony.
Wow. I said, that's 2 weeks away. I have to start my report.
Oh. I figured you were here. I can help you right now because it went a little, I don't know if it was a quote from a press conference, but apparently Maidana has dared Floyd to fight like a man this time. Basically saying, you know, we want phone booth, so.
That is never, ever, ever, yeah, that is never a good sign. Never a good sign with that kind of talk. As if he's expecting Floyd to say, yeah, you're right. I'm going to give you your best chance to win. I'm not going to use any skills. I'm just going to stand in front of you, and we'll just trade punches. Great, just brilliant strategic. Brilliant strategy. There you go. Oh, well, we'll see.
Well, psychological warfare, I guess, on his part. But obviously it's not going to work.
No,
because
I don't think so.
Harder than that. And he doesn't, number one, he's smarter than that, and number two, he doesn't want to get hit in the nuts.
Yeah.
What happened when you're fighting close? Or headbutted. Hit in the nuts, headbutted, elbowed. After that fight, I did see my share on Facebook and Twitter. My think people. After people were calling Maidana such a dirty fighter. Floyd uses the MMA, even though he doesn't talk much about him, Ronda Rousey is. Makes a little elbow every now and then. Anyway, speaking of elbows, Anthony Johnson wants to elbow Alexander Gustafsson a few times. Speaking of Facebook, I saw this pretty much firsthand just the other day. Anthony Johnson first asked the question, should I do it, on Facebook. And, you know, obviously only people in the know knew what he was talking about. And what he was talking about was, should I call out Alexander Gustafsson? Because he posted as a fighter, but this is business. At Dana White said our fight makes sense. There's nobody left for us to fight, plus the fans are begging for us to fight, so let's give the fans what they want. Gustafsson, of course, is kind of waiting for his next shot at the title, so probably not that interested in that. But the Cormier is being delayed. Until early 2015, and Montana Gustafsson to stay out of the cage. I'd be tempted to take this fight. If I was Gustafsson, I would not be.
Exactly, because it's just kind of a no-win situation for him. I mean, if he wins, everyone will say, well, you were supposed to win. I don't think he'll get the credit he deserves, because Anthony Johnson is dangerous. I mean, capital D, dangerous. And on the other hand, if he loses, there goes his title shot. It's a sad situation for him, but I mean,
exactly.
I guess, you know, he hurt his knee in the first place, and Cormier had it, and where we're at. He's just going to have to be patient. But if I were in Gus's corner, I'd say, no, we're not going to fight Anthony Johnson before we get our title shot. Win the belt, then, of course, you have to fight him. But not now. Just not the time.
Exactly. Not yet. So, we have to wait for that one. But, you know, anybody that Johnson fights who has already fought John Jones is going to be a huge yardstick to see, you know, Johnson ready for the title. So, I would love to see that fight, but I just don't think it's going to happen in reality.
Now, Rich, I had you ever seen Anthony fight at 170?
Yes, sir. I'm for Wesley's on those contracts with Bellator.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much. He came on the show and talked about some of the experiences he had with fighters. And you know, I used to always try to get anybody associated with the UFC, whether it's an agent or a fighter, to say something bad about the promotion, right? He ended up telling me a story about how, I don't think this was on the show, this was a little bit later after his lawsuit. And a few stories that Anthony Johnson was basically about to pass out because he was in such bad shape, couldn't wait. And he had nobody out there but Pavia was the interview, not because Pavia hooked us up with that interview a while back, like years ago. I think 2008 years ago. But anyway, he said that Dana White threw him out and left Johnson there to fend for himself when he was about to pretty much need hospital treatment, trying to rehydrate and, you know, recover, or actually trying to still make the cut, I think, for the weigh-in. So because they had the stupid little issues with the contract, Dana White threw him right out of there. You know, really, he was bad. Johnson was that night. Like he was really bad shape. Like he was almost going out of consciousness. And so that's just a reflection of how tough that weight cut was for him.
Uh-huh.
And sounds like he's more than for the you know, the difference in with his recent performances. And you know, he's doing it all the right ways, going using all kinds of high tech stuff. We saw him in the lead up to that fight. He was going into the doctor's offices and using all kinds of weird therapies. Like he's in some kind of a tube with some kind of cold therapy. And it drops the temperature so far inside the tube, you know, and it's supposed to be good for you. And then, of course, there's been high chambers used by, I think the first person I saw use one was Juan Manuel Marquez. Back when Mayweather or Pacquiao fights or something, they did an episode of 24/7 where he was inside a hyperbaric chamber. Now they just did a UFC embedded with TJ Dillashaw inside a hyperbaric chamber doing push-ups and stretching out. So it's kind of interesting that all these guys are not only figuring out, you know, different tricks to use to keep their bodies stretching out more about what their body needs. And Dillashaw said about the hyperbaric chamber that just sitting in there for one day means he can work out twice as hard and not have to worry about being sore the next day. It's kind of interesting because I never heard about that. I thought it was more for lung function, but I guess metabolism.
Boy,
and everything.
How things have changed since the early days, but I guess the reason I was asking about Anthony is I remember back, I think it was 2008, 2009, he split a pair of fights with fellow named Burns. I can't think of his first name. But it reminds me of one of our former guests when he made the comment of, if your body's not where it's supposed to be, you can throw all that stuff out. And I'm trying to think of who that was. But that sticks in my head there, because Anthony Johnson at 170 was ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. But right now he's found out where he needs to be, and he's scary.
Yeah, and out of everybody in title contention, I would bet on him. Right now, not even, you know, when he's actually going to get the show, I bet on him. He's that good right now, but he's just had to kind of find his niche. I can't imagine that it was to fight 70. After the cycle week, he had to be pretty much exhausted, and then I think that's the difference. You know, it's not just that he's kind of he doesn't have to deal with that dehydration process. And he's not going into the fight weaker.
Yeah,
he's going in because he's just got a little bit of weight to cut, if any at all. Now. We've had a couple of UFC fight nights over the weekend. I know we were supposed to have a little surprise at 9 p.m. Eastern, but I guess it's been pushed off. And I'll blow. Yeah, our host, Holly, back on for a little while. She's going to do just the UFC stuff with us, MMA stuff. She's trying to get us back on with Kent Shamrock. So I get up and just kind of put it out there. Sure, going on. Have it again, because that couldn't help, couldn't hurt viewership or listenership. Anyway, she's probably going to be available again in a couple weeks. We'll revisit that then. But like I said, we got UFC stuff to cover, and. Of course, the fight we already talked about, the one in Macau. We're getting a little trouble in the first couple cards of the night, our fights of the night. Kicking the judge off. The main event, of course, was Michael Bisping versus Kung Lee. And, geez, Tony, you could have watched this fight because it was mostly a boxing match. I'd have been fooling that if it wasn't for the gloves and the cage, of course. But Michael Bisping and Kung Lee went to the ground for like 2 seconds. And you know what those 2 seconds were at the end of the fight? TKO. And it was kind of disappointing for me because I kind of like Kung Lee. You know, I think he's an all-around decent guy, but... he's one of those guys, like, it's kind of like Uriah Hall. Like Dana White said at one point, maybe Uriah Hall doesn't have the killer instinct. Maybe he doesn't belong in MMA. He's got his ups and downs in the fight game. And Kung Lee, actually got from my interview with him, he told me he got involved in martial arts for the same reason that Uriah Hall did, because he was being bullied. And I guess, you know, all the bad things you can say about bullying, I guess there is a couple good things. There's creative big-time fighters out there that probably wouldn't have had that confidence unless they needed to have it in those situations.
Yeah, exactly. I would totally agree with you on that. I mean, that got me years ago when I was a skinny kid. It got me into working out, so, hey, it was a positive for me.
Not that we sanction bullying, folks. Kung Lee got bullied by Michael Bisping this weekend, last Saturday, and, man, this was a tough one to watch, because it kind of reminds me of that I mentioned in my defense, Joey Beltran and Vladimir Machyshenko. Even though I don't think Kung Lee looked as bad as Machyshenko in this one, he's not quite that old. He's 42. He looks younger than he is, but his problem was up defense, but you can't have hands-up defense like you do in karate. You know, you can't have one hand way out in front of the other. You know what Kung Lee looked like to me? The freaking mascot for the Fighting Irish. You know? With the old fighting technique, like he's bare-knuckle boxing. And that, you just... with that. First of all, you know, your front hand, any kind of hook on that side is going to get around it because you don't have your front hand close enough to your face to parry or block any shots. And second of all, there's too much room between your front hand and back hand for punches from the other side or right in between, you know, through the uprights. And Michael Bisping was just throwing 1-2 combos, hooks and uppercuts, and just basically put a shoe shine on Kung Lee right before the end. And over 3 straight rounds, all Kung Lee was doing was, you know, landing a hook or two every now and then when Bisping got in too close or maybe a body kick here and there. But right away, it made me think maybe I should train some MMA fighters or something or, you know, give advice. Because right away, the first thing in the first round when Kung Lee started throwing a couple kicks was, you know, this is going to have to be it for you. I mean, that's your specialty anyway. And Bisping's got you outreached, so if I was in Kung Lee's corner after that first round, I would have said, you know, just let your feet go. Never mind letting your hands go, because that's the only place you're going to have reach in this fight. And, you know, whoever those corner people were didn't really catch in on that, because they just let him get his face beat in. And, you know, the doctor kept coming over and looking at his eyes, and by the time the fight was over, one of his eyes was swollen shut. The other one was all cut up all around it. And she read my article. That's all I can say.
What kind of advice was his corner giving him, or could you pick up any of it?
Well, now that I mentioned it, I don't even remember. But I just know that they weren't saying throw more kicks. You know, I think they were just trying to encourage him, you know, you can do it, you know, you're okay, because it was more of anything with him coming back to the corner looking the way he did.
Yeah.
I know Mike has been, you know, has a bad rap in the MMA game, but, you know, he was actually pretty classy in the whole thing. Kung Lee looked actually a little bit more at home in China with those puffy, swollen eyes, you know, even though he's Vietnamese. And this didn't win either at the same time. I hate to say that about Kung Lee, but, I mean, when a guy just comes at you with that kind of a basic approach, 1-2s, leg kicks, you know, body kicks, and... have much intensity at all. He seemed to be on defense the whole time, even though his defense sucked. You know, it's just a horrible example, too. I mean, I know a lot of people like to see people get beat up and knockouts and stuff, but when a guy just has no answer and just can't even touch the other guy with a three straight rounds. And Michael Bisping, if you've seen him, he's huffing and puffing like he was going to die. Round and just was able with that much fatigue to go out there and finish it off in the fourth line. Just shows you how exhausted and out of it Kung Lee was and beat up he was.
Yeah, I just see fights like that as ugly. I mean, I want competition. You know, unless it's one of those rare occasions that I really despise one fighter, but that's very seldom with me. I mean, someone has to go really out of their way to get on that list for me. But yeah, if it seems like there's no chance, you don't want to see anyone seriously injured, like stop the damn thing. Very ugly. Sounds like it was a very, very ugly fight.
Yeah, I didn't really like watching it myself, you know. But, you know, at the same time, you know, Bisping showed the kind of fight. Of course, if it's on the feet the whole time, he can do all right for himself. But, you know, it has to be against somebody he can outreach. Because if it was anybody else that was his height with his reach, I don't think he would have done that great. But obviously, he actually threw a spinning back kick at one point, too. that nailed Kung Lee right in the stomach, which was impressive. So he's got a pretty good stand-up game. More hands than anything, but, you know, got a couple knees here and there.
And he has very good lateral movement, and Kung Lee is more of a power striker. He's got to plant himself, and I kind of seen this one coming. Because if you can't get Bisping out of that boxing rhythm, again, when he's got that movement going, and so he's not a devastating puncher, but they add up. I mean, I seen Kung Lee's face after it was over. So it's hard to say where Kung Lee goes from here, if he's even going to keep going. I mean, I know he's getting older and he's got quite a few other things, so we may have seen the last of him, but time will tell.
Yeah, I don't know if there's anybody out there that is well suited for him. You know, somebody with similar, I should say, reach to him would probably give him a better fight. I think that's why he did so good against Rich Franklin. You know, here's a guy that's on this, you know, farther on in his career and age, just pretty much similar high reach. Bisping's a little bit taller. He's got a few inches of reach on him, and, you know, the inches that count. So, and Kung Lee, I mean, San Chu is his specialty, and that's a lot of kicks. That's what really got him through a lot of his early fights. So I was very disappointed for him not to be able to figure that out. Anyway, there's a whole other card to talk about, of course. A lot of Asian guys on this card, being it's right in their neck of the woods in Macau. Tyron Woodley fought Dong Hyun Kim, knocked him out in a minute with TKO from punches. The co-main event was Lai Peng Zhang beat Brendan O'Reilly, by Ning beat Jian Ping Yang by unanimous decision. Who do you root for? Both Asian guys. That's a tough one. Wang Tsai beat Danny Mitchell by unanimous decision. We had Alberto Mina beat Shinsho Anzai by TKO, also in the first round, the 4:17 mark. And we had a rear naked by Yuta Sasaki over DeLorme. Cole Head of the Night beat Anying Wang by punches from our submission from punches with 10 seconds left in the first round. And we had another all-Asian fight, Royston Wee versus Zhukai Yao. Wee won by split decision. And these were the two fights judged for use, by the way. Both split decisions. I don't know if he was he was the only split both times, but I know Dana White actually agreed with him one of those times. So, anyway, first fight of the night was Milena Dudieva versus Elizabeth Phillips. And Dudieva won. I split decision there. Tough. Anyway, we had another fight also that night. Very surprising result in the main event there. Rafael Dos Anjos hasn't made a lot of the headlines over the recent years, anyway. But he made some headlines this weekend.
Yeah.
Beat up Benson Henderson pretty badly in the first round, even though I thought the stoppage was a little bit premature from John McCarthy. Not that I think Dos Anjos couldn't have finished it off after the fight was stopped, if it wasn't stopped then, but Benson Henderson jumped right back up to his feet after the stoppage and acted like he could fight another five rounds.
But you know, Rich, I kind of had the feeling there that was one of those flash KOs, you know, where he was out just for a second or two. But I know that when he fell, his arms were not protecting his face. His arms were wide open at that point. Now, granted, it was only for a second or two. But we've seen that happen before, where the guy's just, he's out of it for a second or two, and then all of a sudden he's right back and ready to go, But the problem is, in just a second or two, when you're on the ground like that, there's a lot of damage that he could have absorbed. So at first I kind of questioned McCarthy, but when I seen the replays, watched it a few times, I'm okay with the stoppage.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, I think Benson Henderson probably wouldn't have made it out of that situation if it was allowed to continue. But, you know, I think he's got to be given a shot. Of it, and I don't think he was really out of it. But, you know, it looks so much different than it in slow motion. So anybody can say, you know, it shouldn't have been stopped when you look at it in slow motion. But, you know, when it's happening like that, and John just used his instincts, he saw him go down in a heap and called it off. And Benson really can't complain. I don't think he really did complain all that much.
No, he didn't. I think his manager complained a little more than he did, but Benson just said, "Well, that's the breaks, and you know, we'll deal with it." I mean, he'll be back. You know, I certainly don't think he's done by any stretch.
And you know, keeps Rafael Dos Anjos back at the picture, and we also had a first round knockout in the co-main event: Jordan Mayne versus Neo Punches. Mark. Leakey's beat Francis Carmont also by knockout punches in the second round, just 20 seconds in. Max Holloway and Clay Collard fought almost to the distance, 347. James Vick won a unanimous decision over Valmir Lazaro. Chaz Skelly beat Tom Ninamaki by rear naked submission at the 235 mark. And we had Michelle Magny versus Alex Garcia. Ended in a unanimous decision for Magny. Benil Darius beat Tony Martin by arm triangle choke submission. Matt Hobart beat Aaron Phillips by unanimous decision. And Ben Saunders beat Chris Heatherly by an omoplata submission, which is actually the first time it's ever been done on the...
Yes, that's very hard to do. Even in a regular jiu-jitsu environment, when you have the gi on, that is an extremely hard submission to do. Yeah, that had to be submission of the year. Submission of the decade.
And also, I have a little tidbit of a story about Ben Saunders coming back to the UFC. It's kind of an interesting little story. But basically, he had some major issues with Bjorn Rebney and his people. It's kind of one of those situations where he wanted out desperately and did not expect to be with them for as long. Always wanted to get back to the UFC, and finally does and comes back in such a special way there. So congratulations there, but we'll get to that other part of the story a little later. First fight of the night was Wilson Rice versus Joby Sanderson by unanimous decision. Of course, we've got the UFC 77 card coming up this evening from the Sleep Train Arena in Sacramento, California. But I don't think anybody's going to be sleeping. This is a hell of a card. We got main event. T.J. Dillashaw, he's only 10-2, but don't let that record deceive you, because he beat the ever-living crap out of his opponent this week, Renan Barao, in the last game. Got the title. Barao is 32-2, and Dillashaw looks better than ever. He was hanging out with the guys from the embedded episodes I watched, and the last words of one of the, I think, wide receivers he was talking to is, kick him in the jaw. And he did kick a lot in the last fight, but I'm not sure how many head kicks there were or if he landed one to the jaw at all, but he definitely threw a lot of punches to the jaw.
I guess the question going into this was that just an off night for Barao? And I get the feeling it was more than that. I mean, after being so dominated every minute of the fight, as long as it went on, I just don't see how many adjustments Barao can make this time around. I mean, you know, maybe he can, but I haven't even seen the odds yet. Have you seen the over-under, or do you know what it is?
I'm not sure, but I would probably bet to be a wide favorite from the first results, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it was just total domination. So I've got to go with the champ in this one.
Interesting, because they really didn't show a lot of what he's doing in the gym. Actually, most of the time, he's outside in the streets of Brazil. So, I mean, I don't know what kind of professional program he's got, but, you know, it's not like hills or anything. He's not running up hills or even using a gym setting. So, I mean, obviously they only show a small snippet of what he's doing, but it seems to be like a very professional training camp atmosphere. And one of the things he was doing, concrete steps on his hands backwards. You know, just putting his feet behind him like in a push-up position, but walking only with his hands and just moving his feet up and down, going backwards up the steps, which I've never seen done. I did a similar thing with, you know, a wheelbarrow. When I was wrestling in college, you'd have two-man teams, you know, go up and down these huge set of steps behind the high school, and these were actually railroad tie steps with gravel in between. So we'd do like one guy would hold the feet, I would use the hands to go up these steps. That was kind of a pretty decent workout. It was pretty crazy, but I don't know what this version of it was doing for Barral and how it's going to improve his game, but I think most of all he needs a better strategy and way more movement. And he's got to mix it up just like Dillashaw did. There's all kinds of professional. Obviously, he's you know, a big world champ there now, but he's got all kinds of legends of the sport. And there's a guy like Uriah Faber. He's working with Dwayne Bang Ludwig out there all the time. So he's got a lot of big-time professional people who have been in the sport a long time surrounding him. And Barral has a hell of a lot of jiu-jitsu legends and, you know, a lot of background and training places. I don't think it's the same caliber of people working with him directly that there are working with Dillashaw.
Well, and remember this, too. There's an old cliche. Once you become the champion, that automatically makes you maybe 25% better. Most of the time. I know it's an old time saying, you know, but it's been around a long time. These old cliches have some power. They wouldn't have lasted that long. It does something to your psyche so much that may come into play.
Very early in my writing career, I learned not to use percentages pulled out of your ass. It was actually a funny story. As I was writing for the high school newspaper, and I was the editor, so we were doing a story about hats and coats in the environment. You know, you couldn't wear a hat or a coat once you're inside the school. Again, so the principal saw it, and the principal actually used to play for the Pittsburghs as a linebacker back in the day. Runs down fuming, comes right into my newspaper office, and he's like, "What is this crap I'm reading? 80% of kids don't like school. Where did you get this statistic?" You can't do that. So don't make up statistics. I do believe when it comes to judging fights, you know, a guy who beats the champion has to do 25% better in a lot of cases. I believe that's stereotype, but I don't know about if the automatic becomes 20.
Well, I guess you could say that's a round number. You know, it's an approximate figure, okay? How about that? Or are we just going to say it makes you better, okay? Would that be better than saying 25%? Well, it just makes you better. You get my point.
Right. Yeah, well, usually it attracts, you know, good people to work with you, too, on top of that, because everybody wants to work with a champion, too. Anyway, Danny Castillo's in the co-main event here on Saturday. He's 17-6, fighting Tony Ferguson, 15-3, and was not go. Another former tough veteran from the season of Misha Tate versus Ronda Rousey. We got Shayna Baszler. She's 15-8. She's back in the octagon and is fighting Beth Correa. 8-0. So all third on the card. What we talked about last week with Tim Boach about the women fighters getting all the hype and the hoopla when some of the male fighters with that kind of a record are getting so I guess she deserves to me that. And then there's in the UFC, so she's got a big uphill climb to win this fight. Also, we have another tough veteran, Ramzi Najem, 9-4, fighting Carlos Diego Ferreira, who's also undefeated at 10-0. He's, I think, from one of the Brazil tough seasons, if I remember correctly, so that's kind of a... Oh. And tonight, Derek Brunson, 11-3, Lorenzi. And we've got Henry Cejudo's UFC debut. He's 6-0, fighting Scott Jorgensen, who's 15-9. Anthony Hamilton's in the third fight of the night. He's 12-0, Ruan Pass, who's 8-2. Second, Joe's 15-2 versus Anthony Burchak, who's 11-1. We also have the first fight of the night, Chris Arizona, fighting 7-1. Sounds like all pretty decent match. Should be an interesting. UFC is finally coming around to drug testing. To be a significant shift. They said they're changing their testing program to unannounced year-round blood and urine testing. And so this is at the same time makes me wonder, you know, I always say like it's I think they're going to... All right, we're back. As I mentioned, I don't know, what's the last thing you heard, Tony?
I've been having bad connection for a while.
So you don't remember? Well, when I heard the hang-up, I don't know if it was the exact time, but I was talking about drug testing in the UFC. Did you hear any of that discussion?
Well, I heard about the drug testing, and then the hang-up happened on me about maybe 10 seconds ago.
All right. Let's see. Connects. Again, where he heard. Anyway. Might as well just start the whole discussion again. I was just getting into it. The UFC is deciding now that they're going to do performance-enhancing drug testing, blood and urine. So it's a big development for them. And I was mentioning that the UFC, at least Dana White, has mentioned in the past that he wants to be more like the NFL. Well, the NFL... A lot of guys actually going to be out for a lot of games this season because of that testing. I actually heard last week there was a guy, a kicker from some team, is going to be suspended, I think, 6 games for drinking 2 beers at home while on vacation. Did you hear this? Yeah. He was in the league's alcohol. They're like, who told on him? why would you be that much of a punk and rat him out for 2 beers at home? And, if that's a violation of the policy, that's pretty bad. But he pretty much... What?
I don't know if beer being banned yet.
Yeah. I guess once you sign up for their alcohol program, you're not allowed to have any alcohol at all. So.
Yeah, ridiculous, though.
But his DUI was like in 2011. Hopkins, 3 years of shit wrapped up in that. That's a real story, so I was pretty surprised. But anyway, USC is deciding that they're going to do this year-round random testing, especially out of competition. They say the end goal is unannounced year-round blood and urine tests on the USC stable of approximately 500 athletes using an independent sample. This in spearhead, it looks like, by Mark Ratner, who actually was with the Nevada State Athletic Commissioner before he joined the UFC. He says, we are meeting with different companies right now. We're going to have out-of-competition testing. I'm not sure when it's going to start, but we're working on it right now. Unannounced blood and urine is going to happen, hopefully in the next 3 or 4 months. 500 fighters, there are 6 or 7 fighters in foreign countries, make it tougher, but we're coming up with a plan. And agencies are making proposals to us in the next 2 weeks. Pretty big step. I mentioned the NFL. Condoned with the painkillers, especially. Not illegal drugs, but prescription drugs. So I wonder, Dana White's always saying we want to be like the NFL, if it's going to come back at that suit one of these days, because they haven't done this sooner. They've allowed fights to go on, knowing that there's a possibility one of the guys might be on some kind of drug, or, they've allowed these guys to go do this stuff outside of testing and outside of, pre- and post-fight screenings, where they're allowed to do it subject to this type of test, Something they should have thought about at the very beginning, doing something like this, especially with, how cost-effective it's becoming. I know their contracts are very strict and very favorable for the UFC, but one of these days, somebody's going to find a loophole to sue these guys on behalf of a lot of
much, knowledge I had of the situation. But from what I did, you got drugs that you can track. You got your illicit, illegal drugs, your cocaine, your cracks, your heroin, your marijuanas, even though marijuana is, slowly but surely becoming legalized. Then you have your other enhancers, but you're now, you're getting stuff like an Adderall and, Ephedra and things like that, diet drugs that are showing up in the bandwidth. Baseball and NFL are really cracking down on these. You're getting a full game suspension because your doctor prescribed you a nasal inhalant and had something that appears on the bandwidth. But your own problem when it comes up painkillers. You get a nasal spray or an Adderall for ADHD, and that might have a single stimulant in there that's trackable, gets you banned. But when it comes to for instance, Biden or something like that, he had people to ban somebody for. That's one of the most abused drugs out there. I know people personally, the whole bottle of Percocet, and like, when you pop out the canned spinach and you squeeze it into his mouth, the whole bottle of 30 pills is going to pop on me. I see them. I see them for 4 hours and then the other day, I need more. If you just take a whole prescription of the last one, like, you can see. And you can see. You know? So that's where the problem is, because years ago, I went to an XFL game that one season the XFL was in existence. I knew a guy that Andy Reid had cut from the Eagles. I met him through a friend. And this guy is an offensive lineman. He's about 200 pounds. And he got basically thrown out of the NFL. And we go to the game, and after the game is over, we're hanging out. He pulls out like a large ziplock bag, must be mad about 100, 150. And these guys got some upset. You know, I got some Percocet, Oxycontin, Vicodin, Naproxen, this. But then I got some puffers too. You know, you can get on a plane up. So get ready for a game, I'll pop a few uppers. You know, and I'm like, you're 400 pounds. How does your heart take really seriously?
Right. And that's what the NFL lawsuit's about with all these drugs. I mean, they're basically being given prescriptions. And one guy said, you know, he was cleaning out his house the other day, and he found a bottle of, like, 300 Vicodins, you know, that he had from his playing days. So this is how easy it was to get it. And I'm curious at one point that the FBI looked into it in the NFL. Once they saw this lawsuit, they were trying to figure out supplying.
I'll tell you right now, for me personally, you know, I do not have to get it. I am not a drug user. I actually honestly can't stand the sight. I mean, okay, if someone's doing, you know, smoking some weed or whatever, I'm tolerant to that. You know, I'm not going to say I've never done it. I've done it maybe five or six times in my life. Never really enjoyed it because it would make me like, I'd like to have some drinks and still have fun. But other stuff, it would be hardship for things that hurt and make me sick. Now, I've had surgery. I've had injuries to my shoulders, injuries to that boxing. Well, I did legally prescribe, you know, your vitamins. And I honestly really didn't like them because it would make me sick to my stomach. You know, I would take them because it would just take the edge off the pain and help me sleep through the night after surgery. But I can't say that I enjoyed taking them. I know, work, you know, 50, 60 hours a week and not be able to buy a Wawa sandwich at the end of the week because of this. Because they're dropping $400 or $500 a week and getting these pills. And then they're just because they want to drive. And when you go to work, you know, you work with somebody, your life's in their hands as well if you're doing, physical work, or if you work with or especially electricity, and these people are, like, falling asleep because they're, like, drugged out of their mind. No, I have no problem with quitting a person like that because I am not risking my life because you have a problem. That's bullshit. You're just paying time when it comes to money. I earn my money, too. You know, I'm not going to sit there and then cry sorrow to me for more money than I am, and then you borrow money from me and then not want to pay me back. That doesn't work. You know, I have the definite problem with people that do that.
the worst part is a lot of those pharmaceuticals have crazy side effects. So, you know, even though you're getting some sense of relief in your head, you know, it's doing crazy stuff to your system. You know, especially when you abuse it to that level. But a lot of, you know, once it's given to you in these situations, a lot of the when they retire, these guys retire, they're going to try to keep it up, right? You know, how are they going to get the money to do it when they're retired? You know, when they didn't save enough.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to turn to bad. You know, it just totally ruins people's lives. You know, that's another reason why it's needed, you know. And I know a lot of these screenings don't test for that type of stuff, prescription drugs, but I think if they're testing blood and urine, they'll be able to test for whatever the heck they want to test for and find out. And, you know, it was actually this week it came out a story about guys tangles with pills. Chris Lieben talked about he was doing a lot of drinking, blackout drunk episodes, and this is after he quit pills, you know. But yeah, a lot of people struggle with, you know, if it's not the pills, it's going to be alcohol, and if the pills are gone, they turn to the easiest thing, which is alcohol. So anything to numb the pain, I guess. It's got to be able to say, hey, I got a problem, can I check in the system here and do some kind of rehab without violating the contracts or whatever. Yeah, it's going to happen. We're going to have random testing, and hopefully it works out. Hopefully it does send a message to a lot of these people who have been getting away with it. I know the recent weeks, we just had two people on the same card not too long ago. I think it was Kevin Kesey and Drysdale there. Both get popped for different types of steroids. One was, I think, TRT, a little bit too much. It's elevated levels. Yeah. See, that's a concern there, that the guy is doing it more than once and got caught. How many times has he done it without getting caught, you have to ask. And then Kevin Kesey, he just popped for the same thing that guy fought Cathal Pendren, Mike King, was the gross animal. So obviously that's telling you, you know, both in close proximity to each other got busted. So that tells you that's another popular drug that they're trying to use to cut weight. I think it's the same thing that even the woman fighter there, Chris Cyborg, got busted for. So it's obviously a popular thing in the male, the most common steroids for people to get busted for, and it's been known in, to be used for weight-cutting cycles where people, especially bodybuilders, want to have more definition in their muscles and less fat. You know? So they take this stuff to aid in that process, and obviously makes sense in some ways, you know, if you want to cheat, to use it to help you get down to the weight, you know, people have obviously been using it, so I think it's going to really pull a wrench in and help these guys in the sport itself and prevent them from damaging situations later from doing this stuff. And the only other thing that's good with is people are going to get suspended if they get caught, right? So there's going to be a lot of canceled bank card problems as bad as we think. The message that, you know, this testing period means, hey, cut it. Yeah. And the UFC acts like, you know, it's every time an event gets canceled, so they're going to have a tough time with this if it really is that much of a problem. A lot of fights are going to get canceled. Anyway, one guy might be coming back to the mix that has been around in a while, Nate Diaz. He's actually passed things up with Dana White. Even though he had his so-called meltdown over there in Macau, he apparently had a meeting of the minds there with Nate Diaz. He said he took everybody out for the Tough 20 finale, and he said it was a very, very rough night. He also added a lot of damage was done that night, but Nate and I got together that night and talked, and we're going to get together when I get back into the country. He did clarify he meant brain sentence. Physically, it was a pretty crazy night, crazy fun night, but Nate and I got to spend some quality time together. Diaz was also a veteran of the Ultimate Fighter. He was on the fifth season. He's 17-9, and he last competed on November 30th when he knocked out Gray Maynard to snap a two-fight losing streak. And he also got a post-fight bonus for that one. Andrews trading some insults back and forth at each other. Dana saying that he doesn't care because Diaz doesn't really move the needle. And, you know, if you don't want to fight, you don't have to fight. You just split it. But now he says, we'll see. We were out having fun. We talked business for a little while. We were in a room, and where he is and where we are, we're not even close. But I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I've always had a great relationship with Nate Diaz. It's not like I don't like the kid, and he's hard to deal with. The thing in his head, and we've got something else in our head. Bizarre story, but interesting. The co-main event at UFC Fight Night 49 in Oklahoma was a guy named Jordan Mean, and his father was actually arrested and charged. He's the owner of the Canadian Martial Arts Center in Lethbridge, I think in Ontario. He was charged with sexual battery on Friday afternoon. And hours later, surety bond. He was supposed to act as his son's cornerman at UFC Fight Night 49. And the officials with UFC released a statement condemning the actions he's been charged with. They said, we were made aware that James Lee Mean, father of UFC competitor Jordan Mean, was arrested on allegations of felony sexual assault. Mr. Mean is accused of sexually assaulting a housekeeper at the UFC's host hotel in Tacoma. Dominic Strauss-Kahn, dude, got wrapped up in all that, but ended up getting away with it because of his money. It doesn't sound like that's going to be the case here. The UFC statement also said, the UFC finds the allegations against Mr. Mean deplorable, and we fully support local law enforcement and its investigation. The UFC is also prohibiting Mr. Mean from attending tonight's event should he post bail. Jordan will recover for something to add to. Pretty crazy. And of course, Jordan didn't miss his dad in the corner. He dispatched Mike Pop hand strike followed by some punches. First round, 72 seconds. Just another odd story there in the world of MMA. And I talked a little bit about the leagues that Manny Pacquiao is involved in over there. They just had a draft the other day. Hopefuls were in the 2014 PBA rookie draft. And this is pretty interesting considering that Manny Pacquiao is actually considered a draftable player, even though he's already signed on to coach one of the teams, the Kia Motors team. He could have been drafted by another team, and then his own team would have had to trade for him to get him back. So I ended up reading on how the draft went, but I thought that was kind of interesting that it was that kind of a setup. You know? Even though he would be coaching one team, he could be But anyway, either way, whoever drafted him, he was going to become the first dual athlete, the oldest rookie pick, and the first ever rookie head coach in PBA history. And as I said, now he's trying to recruit Meta World Peace, formerly known as Ron Artest. And Tom knows pretty well.
Yeah, sir. Just got to meet him about a little over a month ago. And I told him, if all else fails, you got a whole new career here. He'd have a heck of a reach to get by. Now, I don't know what his infighting game would be like, or his ground game, but if he could keep the fight at his range, he could be a problem.
Right. Also in the draft, Rene Pacquiao, who's a cousin of Manny's. So it's kind of interesting. It was an interesting interview. If you get the chance, check out Bloody Elbow's interview of Anthony Bourdain. I don't know if you guys have watched that cooking show on CNN that's hosted by Bourdain. Parts unknown. It's a pretty good show, but apparently, I didn't know this until I read this interview. Stephanie Daniels, this article actually called Stephen Daniels. Down the street there. It's almost the whole article, and every time she asks a question, they have her name in there correctly, as Steffi Daniels. But they called her Stephen Daniels. This is just a snippet of the article in there, and it talks about how Bourdain's wife is an active blue belt Brazilian jiu-jitsu competitor. Her name's Octavia, and he's actually in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and he trains with Henzo Gracie in New York, whatever. And he actually skipped New York traffic recently by helicopter just to go to Brazilian jiu-jitsu practice with Henzo. So he's actually probably almost as into it as he is into cooking. And he actually compared fighting BJJ to writing. So, it's kind of interesting. He's a great writer, and obviously, they talk a little bit about, what interview. You can read the whole thing. It's on Bloody Elbow. Just look for Steffi Daniels, Anthony Bourdain. His last name is Bourdain, if you really Okay, you want to read somebody who's really good at writing talk about trying to practice without any experience before this, but at his age, he's kind of getting up there in age. It's funny when he talks about, being at his level and looking over at his little 7-year-old running the same moves and doing them with way better skill and technique. I think I'm having a good day and look over at my daughter doing a flying armbar. It's both exhilarating. So it's kind of interesting. The whole family is in on it over there in the Bourdain household. The Wanderlei Silva situation in Nevada is getting more and more interesting by the day. I just read today that the Nevada Attorney General suggested that the commission reject Silva's argument that the whole thing should be thrown out because he wasn't actually licensed in Nevada at the time this supposed test was actually left the building and said that the reason why was because he was on a diuretic. And now he's trying to claim that basically they have no jurisdiction to take disciplinary action in this situation. And this is according to his lawyers, who obviously have him convinced that they have no authority. But the Nevada Attorney General says they do have the authority to take place. And he had a fight coming up, so it's for him to take the test. But apparently, he thinks he has diplomatic immunity or something. He's not listening. He thinks he's in the clear.
Yeah, I kind of get the feeling the way the courts are going to rule on that one.
Yeah, I don't think he's got a chance in hell, especially when you come out in public and you admit that you were on something. That's the reason why he ran for the test. No, I don't think any of his lawyers ever advised him you have the right to remain silent.
Well, it wasn't originally. His story was that he didn't know who these people were or something like that. It was a misunderstanding.
Right.
Well, I guess his story changed.
And, you know, even though it sounds interesting, I mean, not interesting, but it sounds kind of more diuretic, you know, and that's the reason, or, you know, kind of limits what you might expect for punishment. Even if that's what he tested positive for, the punishment might be less than, you know, a real performance-enhancing drug or, you know, a steroid of some kind. Avoided taking the test for it. So, I mean, it's just like, how can you not fine the guy at least and suspend him for something like that? You know? You don't even have to ask him whether he knew. He's already said it out loud. Either way. Hopefully this random testing by the UFC gets rid of issues like this. Also, Ultimate Fighting Championship former UFC champion George St. Pierre has said that he's not going to rejoin the UFC anytime soon, and he won't return until they guarantee rigorous drug testing for each. So this whole development goes a long way towards possibly getting George St. Pierre back on board. He says, "I will never fight again in MMA without my opponent myself being thoroughly tested for the most advanced doping organization like VADA or UFADA under the strictest standards of the World Anti-Doping Association Code." And I guess that's about it for us. Until next week, we will definitely have a guest. We're working on setting the last couple days. It's going to be, I think, an amateur boxer recommended to us by Iceman John Scully, so I got to give a shout-out to him for that. Also, guys, I think we're going to do a fantasy football league this year. You want in on the details when I figure it out. Probably stupid. So if you want to do fantasy football, we're going to do an MMA league with some writers from Twitter. We'll put it out there on Twitter now. They've got so many followers. So keep it. And until next week, guys.
All right, guys.
Thanks for stopping back. Okay, Blog Talk Radio lady, we're leaving. We'll clear the room for you. If I can hang up. There we go.